Welcome to The Grow Room, where you'll find the most entertaining, comprehensive look into the world of global golf. A new day dawns for The Grow Room Golf Show today. I'm Bob Bupker, and I'd like to welcome guest host Jay Randolph Jr. Jay's not only a first-class golfer, having played high school, college, and national-level amateur golf, but also a first-class golf broadcaster, as he is a longtime co-host of the very popular show Fairways and Greens on KTRS in St. Louis. And besides all that, Jay Jr. is an ambassador for the Normandy Golf Club, the oldest public course west of the Mississippi River. So with all that said, let me welcome Jay to the Grill Room. We've covered a lot of tournaments together. We've also visited a few grill rooms together, Jay. Good to have you aboard.
No question, Bob. Looking forward to it. This is going to be a lot. Some of my best times have been spent with you, and your passion for the game is something that I really appreciate and relish, and I look forward to talking golf with you.
All right. You know, the golden rule in the grill room, Jay, is room for both sides of the story. So let's get started. Why not with an old friend and somebody that we've covered for a long time? Truthfully, we've admired for a long time. A fellow by the name of Tiger Woods. And I'm going to start out with some tough ones, Jay. What do you think's up? Do you think his game is almost ready? How do you think his health is? When do you think he's going to return?
Well, that's the big question. You know, he told us he was going to return at Safeway. And I think the thing that I take away with it, and as you said, an admirer of Tiger Woods. You and I sat in awe at times of his performance. But my problem here, Bob, is why enter on Friday to play in the Safeway and then pull out on Monday? That to me, you know, we both know the rules of the PGA Tour, when you have to enter by and by the deadline. That's always been a part of golf. But what changed from Friday to Monday? I mean, did he go out and shoot 88 and make a bunch of triples on Saturday? No. He had to have the knowledge that he wasn't going to be ready to play Friday to pull out on Monday. And it just adds, you know, more drama and more question to this story that we all want answered. Whether, you know, I think somebody needs to tell him, Bob, at this point, it's not necessarily about playing and winning. It's playing for the betterment of the game. And we're going to talk about the person who was the best for this game a little later in the show. And, you know, the question is, where does Tiger Woods go from here, and what is his impact on the game? But I frankly was very disappointed with entering Friday and stepping aside Monday. And I know that he was excited and being at the Ryder Cup and seeing guys play, and maybe that gave him a little bit of the feeling that he might be ready. But you don't enter on Friday and bag it on Monday.
You know, it's amazing, Jay. You mentioned the Ryder Cup. I almost think that, you know, the Ryder Cup was a clear indication to Tiger that he wasn't ready. I mean, he watched that Patrick Reed, Rory McIlroy match firsthand, and he had to be saying to himself, hey, wait a minute. If I was at my best, I was going to have my hands full. I don't know about being 40, having all the operations and all the setbacks, whether it be personal or you know, medical. But, you know, for Tiger Woods to do that, where I'm disappointed in him, Jay, and I was kind of surprised at Johnny Miller because he didn't hold any punches. He actually said that he thought Tiger never intended to play, and about 30,000 people bought tickets. I don't think it was fair to them.
No question about it. And that's my feeling about the Friday entry and the Monday switch. And I'd like to think, Bob, that you know, Tiger is not controlled by trying to sell tickets to a tournament or the tour did it or whatever the case may be. But, you know, so many people, you know, he announced it on his website and said, I'm playing. I'm going to play in these three events. And you know, when you do that, you're going to have people go out and buy tickets. He still is the biggest figure in the game active right now, or in a sense, not active. But I agree with you. It you know, you're dead on about your thoughts at the Ryder Cup after seeing that brilliant play. That should have given him an indication. I don't know what he needed or what made him make the decision that, yeah, I'll put my name in on Friday, but Monday I'm going to announce I'm not playing.
You know, Jay, another thing that really concerned me, he didn't announce that, you know, I'm going to go play at Safeway. He announced that he's going to play Safeway. Then he was going to go to Turkey. Then he was going to go to the Bahamas. I mean, so I got the impression, well, he's healthy. He's ready. His game's in shape. He's announced a three-tournament schedule. And then to have what happened at Safeway, mighty mysterious.
It leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And unfortunately, with this guy, as you and I both know, the sips we've had the last five, almost 10 years now, my goodness, or 8 years, have not been really savory, the sips. And this gave you a little bit of hope. And let's be honest, the game, the PGA Tour is strong. I mean, it is strong. But, you know, the PGA Tour can only be, in my mind, as good as the rest of our game. The game that our listeners are playing on Saturday or Sunday afternoon, or if they get to go to a charity event on a Monday. I mean, that's the lifeblood of the game. And Tiger playing, even if he plays poorly, it is still good for the game, because we've got to grow this game. And, you know, we've gotten to a point now, Bob, and this is hard to believe that we're there, but we're starting to think about Tiger's future and what his future means. And this new venture that he's created, you know, just off the Safeway, hey, I'm not going to play. Hey, I'm going to try and rebrand myself for the future. It's you wonder sometimes if maybe he's getting the wrong advice or what his decision-making process is. But the question, when you start thinking about where's the golf going, then you got to start thinking about where's the guy going? What's Tiger Woods going to be at 50? What's he going to be at 60? And there's a lot of great opportunity for him to do a hell of a lot of good.
You know, the amazing thing, Jay, that I think about quite a bit, and I know what a fierce competitor you were. The hardest thing for a professional golfer to, you know, call it quits, is there really is no outlet where those competitive juices can flow like they do coming down the stretch on a Sunday afternoon with an opportunity to win a golf tournament or to win a major. So I feel there's going to be a huge void for Tiger Woods, and I don't know how he can fill that.
Well, and I think he's been feeling that void, Bob. I mean, you know, this is a guy that lived on competition. Yeah, it certainly wasn't golf, but when we've heard the stories about the ping pong or his lifting, I mean, everything he does hardcore. So what is next? What's going to be the motivator? And, I mean, like you said, we've seen so many examples, and golf's tough because, as you know and our listeners know, you have a couple of good shots or a couple of good rounds and, oh my, here I am again. And then it slaps you in the face. So, you know, that's something that the Tiger's going to have to deal with. And I don't know how well he's dealt with it during this stretch where he hasn't been able to play, because how do you fill that void? I mean, you remember Willie Mays wouldn't leave the game and playing for the Mets, and people were like, oh no, Willie. And, you know, we've seen people hang on too long because they don't know what to do.
Look at Michael Jordan. Had all those competitive juices in basketball, then thought he could go play baseball. You know, it's been well documented, and I think we've spent enough time talking about Tiger. By the way, that new venture is under the umbrella of TGR. Let's move on to something that I'm really interested in hearing what you have to say, and that is, you know, the subject of Arnold Palmer. You know, almost everything possible has been said about the King. But what are your thoughts, Jay?
You know, I like you said, so much has been said. But think about that for a moment. And we're a couple of weeks removed now, Bob. And unfortunately, in this, you know, instant society that we live in with the phones and the computers and touched in like you and I are doing the show, you know, a celebrity will die or a political person will die, and there'll be a day or two. There's a void. There's not only a void in the game. I think there's a void in the world. This guy was that special. I mean, nobody is going to stop talking about the loss of Arnold Palmer, because the loss of Arnold Palmer is going to last forever. But the beautiful thing about it is how well he's been celebrated. And you and I both have a friend, Howdy Giles, who was Arnold's dentist and basically became his professional photographer and one of his five best friends. And to have been a Facebook follower of Howdy Giles these last couple of weeks has been fascinating. You know, I met him, you met him, my dad knew him. My dad was there in 54 when he won the amateur in Detroit, the thing that Arnold says changed his whole life. It didn't matter. It didn't matter if you were a stumble bum off the street. Arnold put his hand out, and when he did, you felt like he was touching you, and you felt like he was looking at you. And, you know, as I've said before, one of the things that I heard early on about Arnold, and I always say it, every man loved him, and every woman wanted to be with him. Now, that's a pretty good combination.
That's pretty tough to beat, and I know what I think of, you know, and I'm glad you mentioned the name Howdy Giles, because a dear friend of Arnold Palmer's and took so many great photographs, but he also was Arnold Palmer's dentist, and I never thought I'd see the day when I was down in Orlando at Bay Hill and I was talking to Howdy Giles, I was almost wishing that I'd get a toothache so that I could have the same dentist that Arnold Palmer had.
Yeah, I mean, there's Arnold is the greatest figure the game has ever known. Jack is the best player that the game has ever known. And in my mind, Tiger played the game better than anybody ever played it. That's how I put him. But Arnold, you know, Arnold is such an icon. And Bob, how many people get put up on a pedestal and aren't able to handle it and aren't able to stay there? And people are always trying to chip it away. But Arnie was the king.
Absolutely well said. You know, the Grow Room is proud to be entertaining the active men and women in the military, both at home and around the world, as part of the Armed Forces Radio Network. You're listening to the Grow Room, heard on TuneIn Radio, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and TalkSport 2, part of the world's largest sports radio station. You can also find us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at the Grill Room Golf Show. We're going to take a little break. Jay's going to rest up a second, and then we'll check out other happenings in the world of global golf.
You're listening to the Grill Room.
The Grill Room is thrilled to support the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and all superintendents doing great work for the game we all love. In fact, we call them the unsung heroes in golf. Here's what two-time major winner Jordan Spieth has to say.
If you love golf like I do, you'll thank your golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Golfin, the innovative award-winning clubs of choice for parents eager to see their kids fall in love with golf. In fact, let's let Callum McPherson, founder and managing director of Golfin, explain how Golfin GFK clubs take the young golfer from beginner to winner.
So our clubs, our golf clubs, are designed and manufactured, as you know, Bob, to make the game easier for kids so that we build confidence and they have fun from the very, very beginning. So we then kind of thought, well, what else can we do to enhance the enjoyment factor, the fun factor for the kids? And we kind of thought, well, what about golf balls? So what we've developed is easy-to-hit golf balls. So we've got a 60mm golf ball. Basically, it's about twice the size of a normal golf ball. Other sports like soccer and rugby, the balls are scaled to the age of the kids. So we're just applying common sense to make it easier for the kids to hit the ball, and these things just pop right up in the air. They're light, they're safe, and they're easy to hit.
Visit golfin.com. That's golphin.com to find out more and how to order your kids the gift of golf right now.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. I'm Bob Bupka alongside guest host Jay Randolph Jr. And believe me, he is a St. Louis icon. Well, Jay, the 2017 Hall of Fame class has been announced. I don't think there's an argument about any of the five people that are going to be in there. Let's start off with Davis Love. Played on six Ryder Cup teams. He was captain twice. Of course, just recently won at Hazeltine, perhaps the biggest Ryder Cup victory in the history of the Ryder Cup. And, of course, won his major at the 1997 PGA Championship. And what made that special, and I was lucky enough to be standing on that green at Wingfoot, he had his mother there, he had his brother on the bag, and he had a little rainbow from his father up in the sky reminding Davis that his dad was looking down. Anybody that's ever met Davis Love, he's not only a Hall of Fame golfer in my book, he's a Hall of Fame person.
Class act, and his daddy would be proud. There is no doubt about it, a quality individual. The one thing that I wonder, I heard a bunch of stories about Davis when he was on the golf team at UNC, and this is back when these guys were still using persimmon drivers. There was a hole in Columbia, South Carolina, 360-yard par four that had a dog leg. And you know, nobody would even think about it. There was no shot to the green. But yet Davis Love III, as a freshman in college, drove the green. People don't realize he actually scaled back how far he could hit it to be more of a control player. I mean, he was that long when he was young. And he had a lot of consistency. The one thing I always wondered about Davis, with the one he had opportunities to win majors, as you know, Bob, and you talked about being there at Wingfoot in 97 on that magical day with the rainbow. I often wondered, was he tough enough? Did he want to win bad enough? I mean, you know, it's hard to take away. I'm not taking anything from a Hall of Fame guy, but Davis Love III had the game that could have landed him four or five major championships. But certainly with all he's done and his ties to the Ryder Cup, he's an auto Hall of Famer.
You know, you bring up a good point there, Jay, about, almost being too nice. Ironically enough, I've had that same conversation on more than one occasion with Matt Kuchar's dad, Peter, who used to caddy for him. And I say, Peter, you know, Matt, he's too nice. He's got to, you know, be not the nice guy coming down that 72nd hole if he has that opportunity. I mean, Matt's always got that smile on your face. I know one thing. If I'm playing against somebody and they're smiling, I think, hey, maybe I got a good chance of beating this guy.
Well, and you know there's not a nicer guy than Jay Haas. And he won 14 times on tour, but he doesn't have a major championship. And somebody will say, well, what about Phil? You know, Phil's not. I said, let me tell you something. Phil's a competitor. I mean, trust me, when it's time to grind and it's time to bear down, Davis is the same way, but it just, you know, you see that with some guys, like you said, Kuchar's a great example that, You know, do they have that? To a certain extent, you got to be a little mean in this game. You know, you got to want it pretty bad.
You know, the funny thing about golf, though, we say he doesn't have this, he doesn't have that. Matt Kuchar wins a major next year. You and I would be saying, wow, Matt Kuchar certainly had what it takes to win. I mean, that's just the way it works.
And also to finish up on Davis, Davis made a ton of money. I mean, he made a boatload of money. He was like an ATM machine out there.
Well, I may have to give him a phone call with that information. How about the next one, though? She's the pride of Mexico. What a game she demonstrated. Lorena Ochoa won two majors. She was the LPGA Rolex Player of the Year from 2006 to 2009. And she's going to be the first Mexican-born player to achieve Hall of Fame status. But she is the ultimate in being a person. And, you know, ironically enough, the year that Arnold Palmer passes away, Lorena Ochoa has a little bit of Arnold Palmer in her, in that, you know, you're in her presence, you're better off for being in her presence.
Great, great young lady when she played the game. Interesting that she made the decision that she had done enough for herself, that she didn't need to go after Kathy Whitworth or Annika or somebody else. She had put together that span of dominance and wanted to do other things in her life. And, you know, to have retired at 28 and be in a Hall of Fame, that says enough on its own.
No doubt about that. The third person to be honored, he won the 1991 Masters, affectionately known as the Little Welshman, Ian Woosnam. And you know what? I think a lot of people are going to be surprised when I say he was the number one player in the world for 50 weeks back from 1990 to 92. And you mentioned the name Phil Mickelson before. When I think of Phil Mickelson, I think of two huge voids, Jay. One, that he has yet to win a U.S. Open. I only hope and pray that someday he gets that done. And number two, he never was the number one player in the world, mainly due to Tiger Woods. But, Woozy, number one in the world for 50 weeks. That's pretty impressive.
Well, and as you know, Bob, that was at a time where the Europeans were really doing it, you know, with Faldo and Jose Maria Olazabal, and here comes this Woosnam. And for a couple of years stretch, he played brilliantly. And you know, he was also part of that group of guys that started to come over here and play in the United States. You know, they used to come for the U.S. Open and the World Series of Golf, and the majors and the World Series of Golf. He started coming over. He started getting a nice following and a fun-loving guy. Got a lot of fire in him, and he's a tremendous addition to the Hall of Fame.
I agree. Played on 8 Ryder Cup teams. That speaks volumes about the ability of old Woozy. How about Meg Mallon? Anybody that's met Meg Mallon knows what a superhuman being she is. 4-time major champion, 18-time LPGA Tour winner. Also played on 9 Solheim Cup teams. Certainly very deserving of going into the Hall.
No doubt. I think one of those players, almost like a Billy Casper on the PGA Tour, Meg Mallon doesn't get the credit of being the player that she was, because she was such an ambassador for the game, always smiling, kind of a late bloomer, wasn't a superstar in college, took her a little bit of time to get to feel her oats on the LPGA Tour, but she really, 18 wins, 9 Solheim Cup teams, and she was one of those gals that was really into it. She was always USA, USA, her and Dottie Pepper. Meg Mallon, a really good lady for the game of golf.
Yeah, and I'm very happy she's going to be member of the Hall. The final member to, final person, I should say, to get in, the late Henry Longhurst. He had a byline in the London Sunday Times for 40 years. Delivering his thoughts on golf, he transitioned into golf commentary on TV for the BBC kind of paved the way for Peter Allison and others after him, including Jay Randolph Jr. Oh, no, you don't want to give credit to Henry. He certainly was legendary, and I've met a lot of people that knew Henry in person, and every one of them have said to me that just a super person that was very, very entertaining in his work.
Well, here's a little Henry Longhurst story. My dad only covered the Masters one time in 1968, the year that Bob Golby from Belleville, Illinois, won the Masters tournament. And he was on the broadcast team with Henry Longhurst. And about 2 hours before they went on Saturday, they were having lunch. And Henry's choice of lunch was a martini. And my dad was sitting with him, and Henry said to him, and I can't do the voice, my dad can, but he said, Jay, are you nervous doing your first Masters? And my dad said, well, Henry, I'm very nervous. And Henry said something to him that he'll never forget. He said, Jay, just punctuate the pictures. And that has stuck with my dad for a long time. He tells the story way better than I do, but I'm actually surprised, like you were, with that Henry Longhurst is not in already.
Yeah, it's certainly well deserved. I mean, he passed away back in 1978. It's been a long time, but Henry Longhurst once again, paving the way for us on the other side of the golf cycle,
and one other thing, Bob, back in that day, and you starred in this movie a little bit yourself sometime. My understanding is at the British Open on Saturday and Sunday, when they first started doing the broadcast, Henry would do the whole thing. I mean, he'd be on for 8 hours, 12 hours from start to finish.
Well, he wasn't going to let the starter stay out there longer than he would do broadcasting. I often think they used to save money. Hey, have one starter, have one broadcaster, just make them work long hours. We know a lot about that. Some breaking news that we got to talk about, Jay. I don't like reporting this news because I've seen this movie way too many times. Lydia Ko splits with a caddy, Jason Hamilton, after 2 years, 10 wins, 2 majors. Now she says she needs another set of eyes out there. Never nice. Players never blame themselves. They always go to that caddy first.
The only thing a caddy knows after he gets hired is that he's going to get fired. I mean, it's the life that they live and the life that they choose. And it's always amazing when a player has success and makes a move. I certainly kind of understand times of need change or whatever, but what kills you sometimes, Bob, as you know, is a player's having success with a guy and makes a change. And it's that caddy player relationship is something that not everybody gets to see, as you and I've gotten to see it. And some players handle it better than others, and some caddies handle it better than others.
Well said. Let me ask you a question. Back in your heyday playing, did you play Titleist golf balls?
Absolutely, the old 384 tour ball.
Wow. I always played Titleist too. They just had a red ring around them. I used to get them from the driving range, but they're putting out an IPO. I guess the Randolph family will get in on this. It's going to be valued at $1.7 billion. I don't even know how many zeros that is.
Well, the thing about it, the timing is very interesting. As you know, Bob, with Nike's decision to get out of the golf club business, if you will, and just in apparel, there's some other companies that I know are feeling some tough strains. It's interesting that Titleist is getting such a big push. They are a successful company. There is no doubt about it. They do tremendous on the PGA Tour. They have that name that has stood the test of time. You know, others, you know, we know about Wilson, we know about McGregor, we know about all these companies, but Titleist has always been there and kind of known as a players company. And, you know, there are a lot more non-successful players in this game than there are successful, but yet Titleist gets everybody to think that, hey, if you've got that Titleist stamped on your ball, you're going to play better.
Well, 36% of their profit comes from golf ball sales. They yep. certainly do it very well. Now, the PGA Tour champions, and I really still having difficulty accepting that name for the senior tour, the Champions Tour, but smarter people than me have come up with PGA Tour champions. They're going to be playing an event in Japan. Probably a good move for the over 50 set.
Probably is. We know that here in the United States that the Champions Tour doesn't quite as do as well as it once did. We've seen the success of the LPGA Tour, obviously in the Far East, and now the PGA Tour. It is a tremendous golf market, and it's a thriving golf market. It's even still a growing market, so I think it's a good move. You know, you wonder how many of the guys at that age, especially, you know, in the 55 and over category, are going to want to fly to Japan to play golf. But if the dough's right, they'll be there.
We're talking golf with none other than Jay Randolph Jr., Dustin Johnson, Jay Bird, Player of the Year. I don't think anybody else was even close.
Nope. It was him, hands down. There was some good, solid play, but from start to finish, in the way he played, you know, other than what Rory did kind of at the end, Dustin Johnson, fantastic year, and you could see it coming. You could see him knocking on that door, the disappointments, and I think that's what makes this even more special. A guy that had endured some personal problems and had to deal with that, had a lot going on in his life. And really a banner year for Dustin Johnson, a growing year.
One other item from the other side of the pond there, Mr. Randolph, the British Masters has just finished. It was hosted by Luke Donald. Lee Westwood now has been named the next British Masters host. And evidently the host gets to pick the venue. So I've already started to plant some seeds. Lee Westwood said it's going to be at Close House. He's been attached to that course since 2011. If we can get you named as the host for the British Masters, we can have it contested at Normandy. You like that idea?
I do like that idea. I might keep it, though, over in Europe and maybe go to Ballybunion. That would be a stiff test. There's no doubt about it. But Normandy is a unique property, Bob. It's the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi. And frankly, the last 5 to 6 years leading into this year, it had not been given the kind of treatment it deserved as one of the old gems in St. Louis. And it's been fun so far trying to revitalize it. We're having a lot of fun.
I know you're doing a great job. And speaking of a great job, certainly the LPGA Tour did it right in the send-off they gave for Siri Pack, who really, really deserves so much credit with the rise of the players from South Korea. And I flash back 1998, an 18-hole playoff for the Women's Open Championship, Jenny Shishirapong from Duke University. But what I remember most about that, of course, it was that Black Wolf run owned by Herb Kohler, one of the nicest guys that you would ever want to meet. I treat him as if he's as poor as me, and he loves it because everybody else treats him like the billionaire that he really is. But the sight that I witnessed, and I don't think I'll ever see it again, Siri Pack tees off, Jenny tees off. They start off down the first fairway, 10 feet behind him in the middle of the fairway, Herb Kohler and President George Bush. I mean, I'm saying, good golly, what is going on with this world? And they followed her for the whole 18 holes. And what an impact she has made in the world of golf. And I know Siri personally, Jay, and boy, you talk about a lovely person, very polite, very dignified. And you know, she has meant, really, she helped the LPGA Tour survive. Because, you know, when things weren't great in the United States, Jay, she was expanding it globally, and what a job she did.
No question about it. She came right after, you know, Annika had started to fade a little bit, and here came this young girl, 20 years of age, even younger than that before she started playing. And, you know, that was, she was one of those first players that came as a teenager and had the success. And it inspired a whole group of young Asian girls, and now we're seeing them out on the LPGA Tour. I mean, I think most of them would say Sari was so impactful for them, and it's hard to believe that that was 18 years ago. I mean, we are getting old, and the only thing better than Herb Kohler and President Bush walking down the fairway would have been you as the third.
Well, they'd have yanked me outside those ropes real fast, and I don't want to yank you out of the ropes. The clock on the wall says we're through, but boy, what a pleasure it has been talking golf with you, Jay. It seems like we've been on the air for a minute, and we've used up all our time. I can't thank you enough for joining us in the grill room. A real pleasure, my friend.
You got it, my man. I certainly appreciate always being with you, and look forward to being in your presence very soon. And folks can check me out on Twitter at stlgolfgeek.com. And just one last thing, we had Ken Bone, the internet superstar from the last debate, came to Normandy last week, and he actually did a cool thing. People that wanted their picture taken with him, he raised he charged $10, and he raised $1,500 for children's charities in St. Louis. So in this election year, there are some people that are trying to do some good. That Ken Bone guy was crazy.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I know you were selling your picture for $15. The line wasn't that long, though. A big thank you to one of our partners, the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America. And certainly, they are the unsung heroes in the success of everyday golf around the world. Also to Golfin, innovative clubs for all ages. Beginners to winners, that's their goal. Jay, thank you for being part of the Grill Room today. It has been a pleasure. So I'll take the liberty of saying for Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., myself, Bob Bubka, a thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Like us on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.